This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly, the Premier League. Do Arsenal now have the momentum in the race for fourth place? A 4-2 win at Chelsea, who had to put up with a bobbly pitch. It was only bobbly for them, means it's in their hands, and it's also in Tottenham's hands, and you wouldn't trust it in either of their hands. At the top, Manchester City get a little nervy against a buoyant Brighton. Feels like we're allowed to play the where might they drop points game after every remaining game this season. Dele Alli exists. How nice to see him as he set up a last minute equaliser for Richarlison in the definition of a vital point for Everton. And Newcastle win again and post a nice happy photo. We'll look ahead to the weekend's fixtures in the Premier League, all that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Troy Townsend, welcome.
Good morning, Max.
Oh, it's exciting, Troy. You're on a delay, a bit like you're a foreign correspondent. Like, if it gets really long, the delay, you can just say over at the end of each sentence. Don't answer that because I don't know how long it's going to be. And this is just the intro. Neda Manua, welcome.
Hey, good morning.
And Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hello, Max.
Let's start at Stamford Bridge then. Chelsea 2, Arsenal 4. Tartan Gunner says, should Chelsea really have spent their 100 million on Eddie and Nketiah? Matt says, if Arsenal qualify for the Champions League using Nketiah, Elneny and Holding, does Arteta automatically win Manager of the Year? So Chelsea have lost three successive Premier League games at home for the first time since 1993. Arsenal celebrated, deeply upsetting that no Chelsea player said they celebrated like they won the league, which is what normally happens after a team get beaten by Arsenal. But that Nathan, was a massive win for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. It certainly was. And you know, maybe they caught Chelsea at the right time based on what they've just been through in the Champions League the week before and the FA Cup and alike. But it still doesn't feel right to be seeing this Chelsea side conceding four goals at home. You know, talk about losing three games at home in a row. It's a really, really weird spot. But for Arsenal, you need to be able to capitalize because they're on a bad run themselves. So they were going there thinking, well, I guess this is a must-win game. And they seem to handle that pressure pretty well. And as you said at the start, maybe they do have some momentum. Obviously, they don't have the goal difference in their favour. But it's a result that will make people think that Arsenal are going to be taking this next part of the season very, very seriously. So I don't know. Like you said as well, who do you trust, Arsenal or Spurs? Like, the fan bases are both probably as nervous as each other. But I genuinely don't know. I really don't know.
Who do you trust, Barry?
Neither of them. Same as Needham. It was a great win for them. Very good performance against Chelsea side that I think that's now 11 they've shipped in their last three home games, which is not good. Arsenal, their performance was far from perfect. They'd made a lot of mistakes themselves, but they deserved the win. It was nice to see Eddie Nketiah grab his opportunity because he doesn't get too many of them. I think they were his first goals of the season. Certainly his first Premier League goals of the season. And I don't even know who Arsenal are playing next, but I have no confidence whatsoever they will win that game.
Oh, well, let me tell you, Barry. If it was one club who you would have confidence they would beat, who would it be?
It's not Man U, is it?
It is. Absolutely is.
Oh, no. Right. Okay. I withdraw that remark. I have every confidence they'll do a number on Manchester United, particularly with that Pacey front three, who I suspect will pose the United defence, whoever happens to be in it, all sorts of problems.
Alice the cellist writes, how many performances does it take for you to completely change your opinion about a player? After last night, I have now decided that Eddie Nketiah is the new Ian Wright, and I will not be persuaded otherwise. Listen, Troy, I don't know how good Eddie Nketiah is. I don't know if you know, but I'd like you to posit what you think might happen to the career of Eddie Nketiah from this moment.
Well, to be honest, I would have said that he was on his way out of Arsenal. He hasn't had much opportunity, as Barry has said. Is a young lad that potentially may have gone to Crystal Palace in the summer, last summer, and maybe Patrick might be interested in him again. But he's a talented lad. He just needs opportunity, you know. Someone like that coming off the bench every so often and trying to make a difference in a game that's probably already gone by is not the best way of trying to utilise that talent. So, yeah, listen, he'd done himself a massive amount of favours yesterday. And I would imagine that, you know, he puts himself right at the front to maybe complete the season now. And I suppose you can only judge him by what he does between now and the end of the season, seeing where his status will be at the club and, you know, potentially if he does become the regular number nine as such, or if he's just a bit part player again.
Troy and Nadim, you know more about how football works than Max or I do. If a manager is unconvinced by a player...
Speak for yourself,
man. if a manager is unconvinced by a player, is one performance like that enough to change his mind? I doubt it.
Yeah, for me, I don't think it is. But then the difference is, you know, the manager might be unconvinced by a player based on what he sees during training as well. You know, for us, we just see the Saturday stuff. But if he's an absolute disaster through the week, then that sometimes leads into why they're not playing at the weekend. You know, at times from the outside, we can believe that this is the only perspective and this is why everyone should be judging things according to how we see it. But there's so much more to it. But I'm sure he will trust him to a certain extent because he keeps him in the squads and he does try and bring him on and stuff like that. But you do wonder as well, for the ambitions of the football club, are they in a position whereby in that spot there in the central role, do they want to go with somebody who they believe will develop to be a really good player in years to come? But as opposed to what stage are they on in terms of their development as a football club now? Because they're going for fourth this year. What's it going to be next year? What are their ambitions going to be? Is he going to be leading the line in the Champions League? Is that what the club want? Is that what the fans want? You know, these are questions that ultimately, you know, I can't answer.
Talk about, you know, what he might be like in training. Are there genuinely players, Nadim, who are terrible in training, day in, day out, but really good during the game?
I think that's changed a bit over the years. I think there was one point where you probably had more managers who weren't like going to live or die by the fact that somebody wasn't really trying in training or someone wasn't doing stuff well because they thought, well, you know, he's I can trust him on a Saturday. But now there's more of a trust thing there because I mentioned it's to do with training, but for some people, maybe they're late to this meeting. Maybe they're sloppy with this. Maybe they're not interested in that. And it's all about relationships. And I think in this day and age, they're looking at everything to see if you can work well alongside other people. And they need to know what to expect when they go out there on the weekend because the pressure there's so much pressure on a manager to pick the right team in any situation. And for the players as well, you know who's doing well and who's not. Like I always used to have a bit of a bugbear with my last club because the goalkeeper never wanted to train with us until Friday morning. Then on Friday morning, he'd just mess about. So then when Saturday comes, you don't really know how you're supposed to be playing with him. Like if you roll my ball here, is he going to roll it back to you and all this? He was like, well, here's the theatre. Let's see what's going to happen. You know what I mean?
Save us the Google, Nadim. Who is this?
Let's not get into that. But that really frustrated me because like training matters. And I think the better clubs, they have players who take training very seriously. So it means the standard's higher. And then you can see who's playing well and who's not playing well instead of people who just think that they have a position on a Saturday and they don't need to try throughout that. Because then I think that sort of breeds a double standard. And I think as soon as a manager's accused of that, then you can't really get your reputation back. So I think that's what's key. So you don't really find that many players like that these days at the sort of higher levels anyway.
Producer Joel says, I think it's Real Salt Lake's Nick Rimando, which is what I thought as well, and Barry.
Well, my mic's cutting out. Sorry, my Wi-Fi is getting really bad here. It's getting really, really bad. Sorry, guys. I'll get back to you in a minute.
What now? No, the first goal, Barry, Thomas Tuchel wasn't happy after the game at all, but the first goal, he said, look, the pitch is difficult to play here. Maybe it sounds like an excuse, but it is a very difficult pitch here, not to our favour. The ball bounces very awkwardly in front of Andreas. Talking about Andreas Christensen, who's a bad back pass, letting Nketiah. That ball just bounced exactly like a football bounces on a football pitch, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what the pitch at Stamford Bridge is like. I would be surprised if it isn't excellent. And he said it sounds like an excuse because that's what it was, an excuse. I saw Christensen shin the back pass and sold Mendy short because he was under extreme pressure from Eddie Nketiah. Only he and Thomas Tuchel know whether it took a bobble off a divot or something. The pitch looked fine to me. I thought maybe Mendy could have come out and helped him more, but it was an error by Christensen. And it was angry Thomas Tuchel we saw after the game. And I like that Tuchel. He's quite entertaining. He was asked, you know, what can you do to fix this? And he said, I don't know. I'll have to sleep on it. I commend him on his honesty, because he looked at his wit's end insofar as he ever does. But yeah, he said, you know, we made three mistakes and we got punished for them. But I counted four mistakes, at least, you know, one for each goal, or at least one for each goal. I imagine the Chelsea ground staff won't appreciate him digging them out like that in his post-match interview.
Can we call, is that a play on words? Is that a pun? Chelsea ground staff digging them out, or did I, or is that
no rich? No pun intended. We'll just put it down as one of those cross-come shots that goes in. Yeah, I meant it.
Yeah, I've just gone and looked back at that goal, because just to make sure, like, I'm not losing my mind, and like this. It didn't bounce weird. It's just bounced twice, and then he's just tried to volley it back, but he's come off his like shin instead of his foot. I don't know, man. If I was a ground staff member, I'd be like, Thomas, my friend. No. Don't be putting that on me, because that looks very, very standard to me, to be honest. It's just a mistake.
The second goal was a brilliant goal from Arsenal Troy. But it was interesting, because it was one of those examples of like playing it out from the back where it really could have gone wrong. And it included Granit Xhaka nutmegging someone, which doesn't normally happen. And we should probably praise Granit Xhaka when we can, because we often criticise him for just doing something that Granit Xhaka does. And it was a lovely finish from Smith Rowe. It was just a lovely move.
I mean, I've got that in my notes. So I highlighted Xhaka in my notes, because I think he was at fault for Chelsea's equaliser. Because as Werner takes a shot, and everyone's praising Werner, that he wouldn't have shot, I don't know, even 24 hours ago, which I find quite... He takes a lot of shots, Werner. He just misses a lot of efforts,
totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Xhaka turned his back. He did that thing with his legs there. He leaves the gap. It takes a deflection. Maybe Ramsdale should have done better, and it goes in. But away from that, you're absolutely right to identify him for the goal, because he covered, it was a really, again, I thought the game was really messy in so many parts. And defensively, I thought both teams were all over the place. But he recovered a situation and actually, if you don't mind me saying, bullied Lukaku as well in terms of winning the ball in his own box. And then a beautiful nutmeg on Alonso. Again, to have the audacity to do that just outside the box, you know, with the potential of losing it and potentially another goal, shows where his confidence levels are. What a great move, though. What a great move. And then the finish from Emil, we cannot underestimate that finish from Smith Rowe. He's got a top quality goalkeeper in there. He wasn't under pressure. He slid it into the perfect place that Mendy couldn't get to it. And it was just a sublime goal, and the kind of goal that I almost expect Arsenal to score, and they haven't done it enough. Some will say, look, they're always looking for the perfect goal. But from start to finish, it was a really, really top goal. And Xhaka has to take a lot of those plaudits. But obviously Smith Rowe, with the calm and, I'm going to call it, tasty finish, was beautiful.
He seems to score that goal quite a lot. Isn't that kind of his trademark finish into the corner from outside the box?
Yeah, with a little bit of whip on it and just enough pace to guide it into the bottom corner. He does as it goes. Obviously, he hasn't been playing much lately and has been coming off the bench. But that is his trademark. It was a quality goal. And yes, I've said it. And Arsenal fans who obviously have a go at me normally because I've got a Tottenham allegiance, you can have that one on me. It was a quality goal.
Chris Packham, I presume not that one, writes, how was that a penalty? I mean, I'd love the idea that Chris Packham, you know, listens to this show. I know, and you know, until he passed from this mortal coil, Terry Nutkins was a big fan of the pod, but I don't know about Chris Packham. Chris Packham says, how was that a penalty? It sort of looked like a penalty to me, Nedim, but I couldn't... I mean, it was one where... Was Saka just being clever and sort of like holding Aspilicueta and then lying down? I don't know.
You know, I wouldn't have even looked for that if I didn't see Aspilicueta's reaction saying that he's having his arm pulled, because I thought, what are you talking about? But I'm looking back, there is a skill to that. You know what I mean? Like, both of them aren't going to be really contesting the ball, but Saka has slightly, like, got hold of his arm. And then at that point, as a defender, you're scrambling, you know what I mean? Like, what can you do that isn't going to be a foul? Because if you try and like get yourself free, it's like you're pulling them. If you just let them do it, they can fall. And it's like you've fallen on top of them. But there's no, you know, what Aspilicueta's not thinking, well, right, let me just quickly power slam him to the floor as his cross is coming in, because that's the right thing to do. But yeah, you know, you can see why that's given as a penalty, especially with video replays and stuff like that. But that's, for me, that's the sort of like fine little details that happen within games, which people don't really notice until it happens to you. It's stuff as well, like, say, remember being outraged at some point in the early 2000s as I was running back to collect a ball and the striker like just slightly grabbed my arm and twisted and just pulled it back just a little bit. And I was in a field, referee, he's pulling me, ref. He's like, what are you talking about? But it completely threw me off my mark. So there's so many little things like that. And I think Saka's, he's done well to win that. And Azpilicueta, he just got caught in a situation. So I guess the next time, to defend it better, just be nowhere near him, I guess.
Which is also a danger as a defender, isn't it? How you defend in Redham.
Hang on, we're in the box. Oh, gosh, what are my options here? Okay, cool. Okay, you'll have some space. Let him do that, it's fine.
I mean, the best part of Azpilicueta, Barry, was after the game when a Chelsea fan was giving out to him. So he went up to him and said, all right, well, what's the problem, mate? And I don't know if you've seen this clip, Barry. The fan just immediately was just like, oh, I really love you, mate. Yeah. Oh,
I'm sorry. Well, it's, you know, the yeah, it was funny. I'm not sure what his problem was, but he was dishing it out as Azpilicueta addressed his concerns and he completely crumbled in the face of Azpilicueta's. I don't know, what would you call it, his reaction, but it was...
It was one of those, Barry, though, wasn't it? It was one of those, come and say it to my face. And then the minute he said it, the guy was like, yeah, okay, I didn't mean it. You know, please don't have a go. The cameras are watching as well.
Azpilicueta, he's obviously Spanish or whatever, but if he just had like a proper Northern Yorkshireman type name, you saw the way he played with his shirt tucked into his shorts and all that stuff, like, I think that'd probably suit him more, you know. We should campaign to get him that sort of citizenship. That's who he is, walking over, I'll deal with this, lads. I'll deal with this, you know what I mean?
I mean, the thing is, Azpilicueta is quite a calm, measured individual, seems like a real nice fella, but he walked over there with enough pace for the guy to literally, oh shit.
This is real, yeah.
I might get hurt here.
The Chelsea fans also weren't happy with Romelu Lukaku. It's an interesting situation that he's in, Troy. I mean, I don't know what he does. If he just gets his head down and does another pre-season and stays, or if he looks for an out, he looks to go back to Italy or find a different club in the Premier League.
There's so many rumours flying about, and they have been flying about for quite a long time. Listen, Nadim will know better than me. Confidence is a beautiful thing. When you're playing with confidence, there's no one in the world, no matter what comments, and particularly Lukaku. Remember that game earlier on in the season where he ragdollied a lot of those Arsenal defenders? And I thought bringing him back in yesterday was a really good move, because I thought that actually he could almost know that he's had him on toast before, and there's a great opportunity to really get in between the Arsenal back line and produce a performance that has been missing for quite a long time. But he's suffering massively. I don't think they play to his strengths anyway. And you can tell by the amount of touches he has on a ball and how much he's brought into the game. But his confidence levels are at the lowest point. I mean, you know, I don't want to go back to the semi-final, but we must do, because a rampant Romelu Lukaku, Lukaku who has put the ball consistently in the back of the net, when he comes on, he scores one of those chances, the one that slid across and he puts it wide, slides in and puts it wide. He's now the totally opposite to Werner, who has found some confidence. And the goal that Werner scored yesterday is a type of goal that Lukaku scores. Let me take a shot, a hit, or needs to score. Let me take a shot, a hit and hope. You know, it hits a defender, it squeezes past the goalkeeper, and then all of a sudden your confidence rises because the ball has hit the back of the net again. I mean, look, Chelsea fans won't like me for saying this. It's not a great situation. It doesn't benefit any of them. They spent a lot of money on Lukaku. If he does move, I don't see him back in the Premier League. I think his home and his heart is definitely in Italy, and if they can pull up enough of the funds to try and get him back, I think that's probably where he'll end up, because this situation, it can't continue like this. You can't have nearly £100 million worth of talent that's sitting on the bench, and when he comes on or when he starts, you know, his levels are not anywhere near where they should be.
So what level of talent can you have on the bench? You know, like, it's like 50 million is okay on the bench, 60 million is okay, but 100 isn't? I don't mean that in a facetious way, but I just think it's a bit like the Grealish situation, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly it does change perceptions, but a manager has to look at his squad and go, I'm not looking at your transfer fees, right? I'm just looking at you as footballers,
that.
Right?
I get that, but he was the marquee signing, wasn't he? He was the bit, you know, after they've won the Champions League, he was the player that was going to make them the all-conquering Chelsea Football Club. And they should have been, as far as they were concerned, in the running with Liverpool and Man City to win that title. They're so far off of that. They're now out of the Champions League. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter who you are. Of course you can be on the bench. Grealish has spent enough time on the bench this season as well. Both of them have. But that's not what they bought him for. And it's not about the manager. It will be about the owners. It will be about the people that have spent the money. They've spent 100 mil for someone to sit on the bench. That's not what he was brought into the football club for. He was brought in to score goals. He was brought in to take them to the next level. He started well. It hasn't worked out since. He's then done the controversial interview as such and whatever else. And it just looks like that marriage that apparently was made in heaven is not there anymore.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin at the Etihad. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. We've got a live tour, UK and Ireland, hopefully announcing another date in the sellout that is Dublin, such as your popularity, Barry. We are yet to sell out in London, such as my popularity. We're around the UK as well, Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester, Glasgow, probably forgotten one. Go to myticket.co.uk across June and July. Please come. They'll be fun. At the Etihad, Manchester City 3, Brighton 0. 6 games to go. Still only 1 point in the title race. They kind of stuttered to this victory, Barry, but Brighton were decent. But in the end, they just got it done because they got some really good players.
I wouldn't say they stuttered. They might have been a bit edgy at half time because it was a very obdurate and stout defensive performance by Brighton, but City were creating all the chances. It was one-way traffic, and you felt as soon as the first one went in, that'd be it, and that pretty much was it. Kevin De Bruyne was majestic, as he often is. They had a little bit of luck with a couple of deflections, maybe a bobbly pitch, I don't know. But I thought it was a pretty straightforward win, to be honest. Brighton, you know, they did as... I thought they could have done a little bit better, but they didn't disgrace themselves either. It's interesting, Graham Potter is one of those managers that Pep Guardiola constantly talks up, which invariably means that he does that with managers whose teams don't pose City many problems. And now, admittedly, Brighton did beat City on one occasion last season, but otherwise they normally lose and lose quite emphatically. And I think this was another one of those games.
Nedim, that third goal, I mean, we talked about the Smith Rowe finish. The Bernardo Silva finish it's similar. It's a side foot pass, and the flick from De Bruyne before it.
Yeah.
Just so good.
Yeah, it was very, very good. I think City are in that position where if De Bruyne is going and if he's moving well and he's seeing the passes, like, there's such a different side to play against. I think he's just majestic, and that touch is magnificent. And then, to be fair, to Bernardo Silva as well. Yeah, I'll just take this first time edge of the box. You know, the ball's not sitting perfectly. Just send it to the corner. It looks, those sorts of finishes there, like, I'm glad they're normalised because, you know, for years we saw, let me be specific, okay? There was a time when I was at Man City, we brought in two strikers, Italian strikers, Bernardo Corradi and Rolando Bianchi from Lazio and Torino, respectively. I think it's under Sven Goran Eriksson. And when they came in, their finishing was to kick the ball almost as hard as possible all the time. You know, always going for the corners and stuff, but extra hard. So sometimes you see some of those Roll Z ones, you know what I mean? One might go in, the other one's just sliced and all this. And then that same season, they brought in Alano. And all of a sudden, for the first time, I was seeing somebody just run up to a ball and just pass it into the corner, pass it into the corner. And I think when you see someone like Messi, for example, who scored all those goals he scored, like, it's just finesse. At the end of the day, all you have to do is beat the goalkeeper. Doesn't have to beat the goalkeeper at 100 miles an hour. And there's certain people who just have that quality and make it look so easy sometimes. And that's what that Bernardo Silva was for me. That's what that Smith Rowe finish is. Like, he's literally just pick out the corner, just beat the goalkeeper. It was a great finish, great touch by Kevin De Bruyne. And I think I agree with Barry as well. Like, it wasn't like a jittery performance, but I think where the most anxiety was with the crowd. Because one take that I've had over things recently, looking back, is when things are going well for your team, you sing songs and you sing olays and stuff like that. And what's going on the field is like a joy just to watch. But when things aren't going well, you start telling them what they should be doing. Because there were a few moments in the first half where somebody didn't have a shot, like, ah, shoot. Or like, square the ball, you know what I mean? But if you were 2-3-0 up, there's not the same things happened, but they don't have that level of anxiety around it. You know, and I think sometimes we can read a game according to how the crowd are being. But for those players, whether it's Liverpool, City, whoever, who are known to be doing well at this time of the season, for them, it's just a case of, well, we've got another 45 minutes and this is what we do.
are the fury of the crowd when watching Cambridge where they didn't kick it forwards.
Oh, you're my, like, gosh.
No, that's okay. You can just play the way you're facing. It'll be okay. You can still, you can keep the ball. No, don't go sideways. What are you doing?
Exactly.
You idiots.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
I will say, since Brighton have put that message out where they said, stop telling the players to shoot, they won a couple of games. They won at Arsenal, they won at Tottenham. So it's worked for Brighton because it worked for everybody else.
A tweet popped up on my timeline yesterday, and now none of us were named in it. I wasn't, like, it wasn't an ego search or anything, because God knows I wouldn't want to do that on Twitter. But it was about yesterday's pod, and it was a Manchester City fan with quite a sizable following who was upset. Well, not upset, but unimpressed with the fact that we weren't excited about the fact that Erling Haaland might be going to City. And then a load of Manchester City fans responded, and our fabled contempt for their club was a constant theme, and how that and the fact that Football Weekly isn't as good since you started presenting it.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah. But I was quite perplexed and baffled by this trade, because my recollection is that we constantly purr about how good City are, and that these people seem to be complaining about something that simply doesn't happen. Now, I make no apologies for the fact that, because I'm not a Manchester City fan, I'm left cold by the fact that one of the best teams in the world is about to become stronger by signing one of the best young strikers in the world, arguably the best young striker in the world. But it's absolute nonsense to suggest that we in any way have it in for City or are constantly critical of them.
Yeah, to jump in at this point, like, I've spoken to a ton of City fans, spoken to people who support other clubs as well. And I think, I'm not speaking for all of them here, but sometimes the moment you see one thing which you think isn't as big on your team as you would like, then they will consider that to be biased, and they'll cut ties with whatever they're listening to, and they'll pass that on as saying this is wrong. But that's not like just City fans. That's everyone. Like, I blew my friend's mind because he said, this big City fan, he said, oh, you know, the media guys, they're so pro Liverpool and pro United, they're just anti-City, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, in terms of football media, there's a lot of United faces in there, but that's because they were most significant when, say, TV started to boom and stuff like that. That doesn't really bother me. But then I spoke to one of my friends who plays for Liverpool, and he thinks that people are very anti-Liverpool and I've got a pro-City agenda in the media. And I'm thinking, okay, that's interesting, because that's another perspective, and both things can be true according to how they view it. But then I told my City friend that, and he's like, well, he's wrong, isn't he? I said, well, that means that you could also be wrong. Like, this is just his opinion. This is his perspective. And, you know the work that you do, and you know how you feel about whichever club, and you say how you say it. But what I would recommend is, like, in this time, if you're a City fan or fan of whichever club, if you think somebody's speaking ill of your club, then disregard it and just go on to the club website or something. If you want really, really extra over-the-top pro stuff for your club, then that's what you want. But then not many people do that, so I don't understand. It's just, we just go around in circles, don't we?
But, you know, football fans are so defensive, and, you know, it's a bit like, you know, we'll do this pod and someone will tweet us going, I see you didn't mention, I don't know, Stoke City today. We didn't. It doesn't mean we don't like Stoke City. And it's the same with, you know, I had this on Saturday with Spurs. I was tweeting about Spurs, you know, losing to Brighton, going how annoying it is. And then this Brighton fan was like, typical, not giving Brighton any credit. But I had actually tweeted later, Brighton deserved that.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough. He replied going, well, how? Why? Tactically, what did we do? And I was like, well, why can't you just enjoy the win? I'm not here to tell you. You watched the game. What does it matter to you?
Yeah.
I think on the City front, genuinely, because we have been critical about their ownership, I think City fans hate that. A lot of them do, and it's the same with Newcastle.
But the thing is, I don't think we've been anywhere critical enough. I think we give them a very easy ride.
This is the stuff. This is it. This is it, Barry. That's the bit there. That's the bit you're talking about. This is what they're mentioning. You've revealed it. Oh, no, you've let them behind the curtain. No, fans are entitled to, they can be upset about whatever they want to be upset about, but there are people who are trying their best to try and provide stuff which is entertaining and people want to tune into. And there's not the right balance whereby everybody can be happy, because for every time you talk about a team losing, well, the team that's winning, say, well, talk about us. You can't We're just humans at the end of the day. Don't take offence unless we're actively trying to offend you.
I just thought it was interesting. Just being criticised for things that we haven't done that by people who say they don't listen to the podcast.
You're a bad guy, Barry. You're a bad guy.
I was just going to say that. What you've done is also give them their moment in the limelight, Barry, and they are still listening. So they'll probably quote your words a little bit later on once they've listened back to this as well.
Can we talk about the title race? And I think, you can probably do this every game, like I said in the intro, but you look at the games to go and you look at Manchester City, who are in the box seat, and you've got Watford at home, Leeds away, Newcastle away, West Ham away, Villa at home, Wolves away. And Wolves away is at some point. We don't know when that game's going to be. It seems very hard to me, Nedim, to see where they might drop a point. I guess Newcastle are a really good run. Are they they're home?
I think it's Newcastle at home. I think it's Liverpool that got Newcastle away.
Yeah, okay. In which case, you just feel that City have got this, barring a miracle.
Yeah, you call it miracle. That's a very interesting choice of words there. Okay. You know, I mean, that sounds pro Liverpool to me, that, Max. So you're doing it again. No, I think when you look at it on paper, like Liverpool, City, whoever they're playing, they're going to be the favourites for those games. And on paper, the players will go out there and not think, oh, we'll take a draw today, because they have expectations to win. Like Liverpool went on a 10-game winning run. City have been on a 12, 13-game winning run. So it doesn't really matter who they come up against. The expectations to do it. But what I would add is that at the end of the season, like, teams have got stuff to play for, whether it's individually, collectively, like where they're going to be next season. Are they going to be getting a bonus if they're in the top 10? Are they fighting for their lives in terms of relegation? Is this their last home game? So they're playing in front of their fans and all this. So these games, even though on paper it seems like it's going to go one way, it's never really that clear. And then fans and just people watching, you're going to see 45 minutes like yesterday for City, where they weren't really troubled by Brighton, but it's 0-0 at halftime. And you're like extrapolating, well, if it's 0-0 at the end of the game, then it means that the season's over and everything's busted. But it's the nature of football. So many fans would have taken a 3-0 yesterday. Yet still, so many were panicking at halftime, thinking, well, everything's done now. It's doom and gloom. Like Liverpool, City, both capable of winning all their games on the run-in. But to say that they will do just disrespects for me all the opposition that they become.
Well, I've got an agenda against all those teams, including Tottenham, the team I want to win.
That's how I felt, like, because I've tasted both sides of this. I've tasted being like playing at City when they were really good, but then also being at QPR and, you know what I mean, like struggling as well. So when somebody says this team's just going to win against you, you're thinking, well, what are you talking about? Like when we stayed up in 2012, the last half of that season, we were a disaster away from home. But at home, we beat Arsenal, we beat Spurs. I think we'd beaten Chelsea earlier in the season, and we'd beaten a couple more. And those games which we shouldn't have been winning, but we won them because we had to. We won them because there was something on the line. And so with that being said, like to disregard all the opposition, like someone was saying, I was on a show and they were saying, well, if Liverpool beat City, then, you know, they're going to win the title because they'll win all these games. And I thought, okay, let me just add this up. So what they're doing, they'll win 19, 20 games in a row and they just disregard every opponent which is coming up against them. I thought, well, if I was in one of those camps and this is what people are saying, and if Liverpool even hint at saying that themselves, that's the extra motivation. Not everything's going to go their way. You're not going to win the game like they did against United or they kind of did against City in the FA Cup on the weekend. This is football. You're playing against 11 other professionals playing in the Premier League. Like, if you're disrespectful, you will be punished. So for these two sides, I guess it's just about making sure you're clinical up front and decisive at the back, because then you'll have the best chance possible.
I think what was interesting for me as well is the changes that Pep made. I think he made 6, didn't he? So inevitably, they were stronger last night than what they were in a semi-final against Liverpool, if that's the way that you want to look at it. And I think he knows that, you know, they have to stay on it. And yeah, that first 45 minutes, people will say was not great or was a little bit on edge. But like I said, you have to give respect to Brighton as well, who have just come off the back of beating Arsenal and come off the back of beating Spurs and probably would have been as high as a kite. So that momentum took them into a side that have just got knocked out of the FA Cup and made it a competitive game. I'm not going to say who's going to win it, because I'm not going to go down that route, because you're right, it's so competitive in these last 6 games that, you know, something can happen that upsets the apple cart, as they say. But it's a great running, and I think we should just enjoy the fact that we've got two really, really top teams. But we've also got a league, actually, where, again, we'll say it, a team can pop out of nowhere because of where they are and win a game that any or get points from a game that people are not expecting.
I said on a previous pod, I thought Newcastle might take points off City. But then I looked at Eddie Howe's record against them as Bournemouth manager, has played 10, lost 10, with an aggregate score of about 5,002. And I, to be honest, I still think Newcastle might take points off them, and I think Leeds might take points off them.
Nedim, what was the other show you were doing? What's that about?
I don't need to mention other shows on the show. This is where my heart is. I kissed the badge of the Guardian football.
You supported it. Supported it as a kid, didn't you?
This is what I always dreamed of, and this is where I am. I'm incredibly proud to commit my future to this podcast.
When you signed for Man City, you were like, I'm doing this as a stepping stone to the Guardian football.
Yes, this guy gets it. He gets it.
Right, let's go to Goodison. That is a huge point, Troy, isn't it? I mean, Richarlison missed a couple of great chances. And it was lovely to see Dele Alli doing something. I've always loved him as a footballer. And he did something.
Do you know, this is that game. Obviously, Everton beat Manchester United and you would have expected a real buzz going into this game and a bounce, but that was 10 days ago. And I think it, as each day went past, there was that little loss of kind of the energy from the Man United game going into this game. And I thought the fans were very, very edgy. And those fans, if they're edgy, it makes those players massively edgy. Those fans control a lot of what goes on at that football club, to be totally honest, in a positive way and in a negative way. Leicester started like a house on fire. They kept the ball. They scored early. It was a great goal that they scored. That was the game that I watched. And if I'm Brendan Rodgers, I'm scratching my head wondering how we did not win that and win that comfortably. But Richarlison, listen, he missed an absolute gilt-edged chance in the first half from a great cross from Anthony Gordon. And he'll be wondering how on earth that he's ever missed it. He's missed a header in the second half. But what Everton did, they stayed in the game. Performances don't matter. We're at the stage, Nedim will know this more than all of us. Performances do not matter at this stage of the season. So what Everton did, they stayed in the game. And then Frank brings on Dele Alli, who has not been brought on for about three games or so. It's like he's lost faith in him. Donny van de Beek sitting on the bench, Decore sitting on the bench, and he goes for Dele Alli. And I was quite surprised. Because, when Alli came in, the fans were all, it was great. It was the thing, the player that was going to change us. And they've lost that little bit around Dele as well, you know. And he brought Rondon on. And again, I don't have to tell you how much he's been criticised this season in an Everton shirt. But the two of them made a massive difference. It shuffled Richarlison out wide. Rondon started to win a couple of flick-ons. Richarlison's running in behind. And for the goal, it's exactly what Dele did. Dele ran into an area, so he took a defender out into an area that they didn't want to be. It's a cross, it's a hopeful cross into the box, I would say. At the time, I'm thinking, what a great dummy from Rondon. In comes Richarlison, bam. Then I watched the replay and realised that Rondon was trying to put his foot on top of the ball, completely missed it, completely missed it. And it rolls to Richarlison, it goes in the back of the net. So there's no assist for Rondon there. But, it was just about staying in the game for Everton, and they did, and it's a massive point. It's an absolutely massive point.
You say no assists, but I saw on the record he did get an assist for it, and I was like, I thought, oh, that's a nice bit of play. Spicy little flick there. Sheer class. And then you see it's literally just rolled under his foot. And then Richarlison's kicked one into the ground, which has then flicked off the defender and got into the corner. But down at the bottom, you'll take that. You'll need that. And then think of the effect that has on that Burnley camp as they're tuning in thinking, this is a big moment for us. But then instead, people having balls roll under their foot and then end up in the goal.
They needed it, though. They needed it. I mean, Burnley play tonight and then they play Wolves, don't they? And obviously Everton take on Liverpool, who we didn't even mention Liverpool's running. So that's got to be Liverpool's biggest game in the running, hasn't it? Liverpool-Everton?
I don't think it is. I don't know. I mean, Nedim, Troy has already said he thinks Lampard is a terrible appointment and he's been very vocal about...
Okay. Okay.
What's your view on it?
I think he's a good coach. Listening to people who are at the club and understand his philosophies and all that stuff, I think he is a good coach. But I think he would have been a better coach for them if he came at the start of a season to be able to build something. Because to come in at this stage, or to come in at the stage that he did when the team's really, really struggling, like for all the qualities that Lampard has, we've not really seen him in the Premiership level, like be involved in a real relegation dogfight with a team full of players who have no confidence and something whereby style of play isn't necessarily going to be the difference in terms of keeping them up or them going down. So it's we're sort of in uncharted waters with him. But in fairness, you see, it feels like he's digging in. He's trying to figure it out and just try and give something to the players every week that will keep them competitive. I imagine if they stay up, there's going to be a lot of changes going into that next season because this isn't what he wants. But at the end of the day, like, they trusted him to do it and he understood the situation because he wanted it. You know, not every job, even if it's in the Premier League, is just as simple as saying, well, it's a Premier League job. It's very, very, it's a very tricky spot for him. But good luck to him. If this is who he's going to be, if this is going to be the guy who then builds teams in a different manner because he's had to as opposed to because he wanted to, then it adds another sort of feather to his cap. So, yeah, like, good luck to him. Well, I say that, but then there's the anti-Burnley bias. Yeah, let's see how he does. Yeah, let's see how he does because this is a situation we've very rarely seen him in. And that sort of identity of Everton Football Club, you know, they want fight from their players. They do appreciate quality. But when things are going badly, they want to see themselves represented amongst that playing force. So if he can find that, then I'm sure the fans will be happy.
How's Andros doing, Troy?
Yeah, he's on the road to recovery. Unfortunately, the op was delayed a little bit because it was still swelling on the knee. So he's only had it about 12 days ago now. Where are we? I can't remember the day. Probably 2 weeks now. So we've got to wait again for that swelling to go down for the recovery process to start. But it's going to be a long old haul, unfortunately. But yeah, he's in good hands.
Good to hear. If he is bored, we'd love to get a Townsend on the pod who's a quality broadcaster if he's available.
This could be my last appearance anyway, the amount of stick that I'm getting. So, yeah.
Oh, I see. You just walk off.
The badge. I'm on the way out.
You just walk off set, do you, Troy? When it gets too much, yes. You just can't hack it. Burnley Southampton tonight, by the way, Thursday. It's a huge game for them. And that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll begin at St James's Park. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Newcastle 1, Palace 0. Sixth successive home victory for Newcastle. First time they've achieved that since the Bobby Robson was in charge in 2004. Dan says, Eddie Howe, manager of the season. And then Barry, Matthew replied to that by saying, they'll disregard Newcastle. They hate us now. Or just say it was down to the money spent. So Eddie Howe, manager of the season, ? Barry.
Yeah, I'd have a big question mark there. Well, I don't think he's in the running for manager of the season, but he is doing a good job after a slow start. It's a great atmosphere at St. James Park. Miguel Almiron has been struggling to get game time recently because of the excellent form of, or the rejuvenation of Ryan Fraser, but I thought he took his goal incredibly well because there's not much of him, but he, you know, did well to hold off Tyreek Mitchell. Bruno Guimarães was outstanding again. He's looks like a great signing.
There's only one Bruno, Barry. There's only one Bruno at the moment.
And we don't talk about him.
And it was a good win.
That goal, Troy, was it was Andros Townsend-esque, wasn't it, from Almiron?
There's another reference to another Townsend because you're not happy with me. It was a great strike. Bruno. Again, the quality on the ball. You know, you look at players in moments that define games and his touch and pass, because he knows the pace of Almiron, was just first class, absolute first class. But I highlighted the situation because Tyreek Mitchell has had an absolutely great season, by the way. I think he needs a rest. I've never seen him beaten in a one-on-one situation like that. I think he may have suffered from the goal, obviously, that he was part of the mistake that helped Chelsea open Ruben Loftus-Cheek open the scoring in the FA Cup semi-final. And he looks like a tired young footballer. He's been playing all the time. He's got the exposure from England. I wouldn't see him being ragdolled like he did by Almiron at any stage of the season until that point. But then from there on in, it's all about the quality of Almiron, and the finish is top draw. It's the kind of stuff that I think they were expecting from him when they first bought him, and he's probably not achieved as much as what he should have done at the football club, but maybe that's because of the way the football club has obviously been going until Eddie Howe has turned up. It's interesting, that comment of manager of the season. Well, if we're giving out prizes for manager of half the season, then he's up there with Jurgen Klopp, because I think only Liverpool have won more points than Newcastle during the time since January and since all the big signings. So, yeah, listen, it's a great finish. There's a great atmosphere at the club. They're grinding out these results, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the summer, because a lot of those players that are celebrating in all those pictures may not be part of that football club come the pre-season.
Just for the record, Max, David Moyes would be my manager of the season, I think.
Think so? You think so? Why? That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Why?
I just think he's done a terrific job with a quite threadbare squad who look absolutely shattered.
What about if Klopp wins the quadruple? I mean, you can't change it, I guess.
Yeah, I would then go with Jurgen Klopp. But if we're voting now, I'm going for David Moyes.
Okay. On that subject of what happens in the summer, Nadim, and those players and what will happen to them, Newcastle, you know, have invested sensibly, right? They've bought sensible players in the window. The idea is they're going to build slowly and not, you know, try and sign, you know, Robinho. What's it like being at a club when suddenly they have a lot of money and you start thinking, am I going to be part of this? Am I, you know, does it stress players out or not?
I think it can stress some people out, but ultimately, if you're playing in the side now, you don't leave and, you know, you've had a talk with the manager, you don't leave and all of a sudden think, well, I'm on my way out. But you do face a summer where your club's going to be linked with every human being possible that plays your position. And the hope is that, you know, even if someone like that comes, you can still maintain your place within the side. But it is, it's an interesting spot because most people will never feel that. A point where your club has got the sort of finances and so on to be able to literally bring in a different pool of players. Because, you know, whichever club you support, you've got a rough idea of who the targets potentially would be. Now, all of a sudden, everything's open. It's every tier of player. Like, they might go for a marquee centre-back. They might go for a marquee centre-midfielder. Might go for a marquee forward. You just don't know. Or they might do like they did in January and bring in players who have a big impact straight away because they can sort of buy into the vision from that point. As I say, it's an interesting spot to be in some ways. If you're scared of it, then there's no point being at the football club because this is what it's going to be going forward. And you might end up playing 10 years. You might have played your last game. Who knows? But you have to try and embrace that challenge. And just know that from while you're there, you're still a good professional if you play well enough and you're not going to work out there, then at least you'll have a positive reference to go to the next place, wherever that may be. But don't pack it in just because you've read in the newspaper that they're now linked with Messi and, you know, you think, well, what chance have I got now as Almiron? Just keep playing until you're not playing. And when you're not playing, make a decision then about what's going to happen. I think that is the key thing, instead of just thinking this is going to end badly for me.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Max, and suggest that when Newcastle do eventually win the Champions League, Dwight Gayle won't be in the post-match dressing room photo.
Hey, it's funny you say that, because he was actually just texting me 20 minutes ago. Someone was hammering him for him celebrating in the dressing room afterwards.
What was he saying? What was Dwight Gayle saying?
He was just, I can't say it, I'm sorry. I can't say it, but he's happy. He's happy for him and his team. He's happy for his teammates. Let's say that. It's always nice to get 40 points. He knows what sort of incentives that may bring in life.
Oh, I see. I always thought Dwight Gayle simultaneously looks incredibly young and also like a really old man.
Yeah.
Sort of like Benjamin Button. Yeah. Has anyone ever mentioned that to him before?
Yeah. Do you know what? I see where you're coming from and I will use that one. And also, like, I only properly became friends with him 4 years ago because right. we went to like a wedding together and all this stuff. But before that, I absolutely hated him. He was so annoying. So annoying. But in fairness, he's a good guy. He converted me. I thought I'm definitely going to hate this guy, but he's solid human being.
So that's exciting. So it took was one wedding for him to become like a proper friend of yours.
Usually when you experience somebody on the field, like you can sort of think, well, this is who they are, but then he's just a striker. So they're naturally annoying anyway. You know, especially as a defender. And the way he plays, it's like extra annoying. But then when you actually talk about things that aren't related to football, he's a perfectly reasonable human being and actually really, really good guy. So you go, there's the shout. Enjoy the 40 points, my friend. You deserve it. You've obviously played a ton of games.
Jonjo Shelvey spoke glowingly about Eddie Howe in an interview this week, including the quotes. The first thing when he came in was everybody was given a sheet of paper and they had to write down their family's names, their wives' names, their kids' names, and their birthdays. I think he wants to get to know everyone. I've never had a manager like that. It's something different. It's something I enjoy. As presumably Eddie Howe sending out birthday cards or, you know, texting Martin Dubravka when it's his wife's birthday or something. I don't know. Is that something...
Maybe he's trying to hack into their bank account.
Just a funny feeling. Eddie Howe doesn't need to hack into a bank account now, does he?
I want your wife's name, your birthday, or her birthday, the name of your first pet, and your mother's maiden name.
Just those three letters as well on the back of the card. Kieran says, we all know Barry can score goals, but could he ever show fancy footwork like Alan Saint-Maximin? Did you like, Barry, the little dance that he did while he was just stood on the ball and did about 20 step-overs for no reason?
Oh, I saw that, yeah. I actually wasn't sure if it was real or someone had made a GIF, whatever you call it. So it's real, is it?
It's real. I believe that's real. A GIF, and GIF is something you clean your bathroom
with. All right, okay.
That's SIF. Well, I mean, SIF.
That is SIF now. You're right.
Yeah. It reminded me of a Sunday league player who'd had a really good night on a Saturday night and came out to play but didn't really want to move, so he just moved his, you know, he'd done a 1,000 step-overs and that was it for the game. So, it's at maximum, isn't it? You know, he's going to do those types of things.
All it needed was him to do the 25 step overs and then Indiana Jones to pull out a pistol and shoot him.
Let's look at the weekend's games then. We've sort of touched on Arsenal, Manchester United. I suppose what's interesting with that race for the top four, Arsenal play at 12:30, Spurs go to Brentford at 5:30. Brentford on a brilliant run at the moment. And with the title race, you've got Manchester City playing at 3:00 on Saturday, home to Watford, then Liverpool have to wait until Sunday to play. Does it make any difference? Just going first, is that a good thing, Nadim? Is that better, or does it all depends on whether you win?
I think it depends on the perspective. I think for say City, Liverpool, and alike, you know, you can't help but see the result if you're playing second. You literally can't escape it because, as well, if say the team that plays first doesn't get a positive result, then there's extra motivation for that next one if there can be such a thing. But I think it more so affects just our sort of narrative creation, because I was on Five Live this morning and it said City are clinging on to first place. I was like, clinging on? Like, was that, well, I don't understand clinging on. Like, they just won a game 3-0 and they're still top. You know, they've been top when the games have been equal for a long time. So I think it does affect that. And I think if then say City managed to win on the weekend, for example, and they've got a 4-point gap over Liverpool, and it's like, now Liverpool are now playing against Everton 4 points behind. Would this be the end of the title race if Liverpool don't do this? You know, it's a different spot if Liverpool top. If City lose and then Liverpool back in, you know. And it's the same for Arsenal, Spurs. I think you want to play first and you want to sort of be dominant. Same way in a penalty shootout, you want to go first overall because it's a very front foot approach. You can almost set the tone for the weekend. But the downside is when things don't go well in that first game, whew, absolute carnage.
Another show, Five Live this morning. I'm worried you're spreading yourself too thin here, aren't you?
It's weird.
In the broadcasting
red zone. You've caught me at a time when it seems like I'm doing a lot, but the answer is I'm doing very, very little, my friend. Very little.
any other game? I mean, Chelsea-West Ham is interesting. Look, West Ham have obviously got that game against Eintracht Frankfurt next week. You'd expect they would... I mean, I don't know if they have any players to rest, but, you know, manager of the season, David Moyes, going to Stamford Bridge on that bobbly pitch, Barry. If they won that, you start to think would Chelsea start to get worried about what's happening behind them?
I thought a few weeks ago, and this was before Arsenal and Tottenham started losing for fun, that Chelsea were in danger of not finishing third. You know, it seemed to be a consensus they would finish third and then it was who would finish behind them. But I'm still not convinced Chelsea will finish third, but I think they'll finish fourth comfortably. You know, they had the thing last night. It was the first time I've noticed anyway. I don't know if it was the first time it happened where quite a lot of the ground was empty because of the sanctions. They're not allowed to sell tickets. So only season ticket holders were there. A season ticket holder who's a friend of mine didn't bother going. So there was that was two fewer seats because he just said, oh, I'd rather watch it in the pub. I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham beat them, and I wouldn't be surprised if all the background noise at Chelsea, which seems to have died down a bit for us in recent weeks, I imagine it hasn't died down at the club and on the training ground, and I'm sure there's a lot of uncertainty there.
You know, I don't disagree with you, Barry, but as I look at the table now and they've got 5 points over Spurs and Arsenal and the game in hand, like we talk about not fully trusting Arsenal and Spurs to really finish off something that they're starting. I don't know. It just feels like 5 points, if they were on the same amount of games, is one thing. But with that extra game, I'm just not, I don't know. I'm not 5 points. It just seems a lot. Are Chelsea really going to be losing most of their games between now and the end of the year? I just can't see it.
And Arsenal have got to play Spurs, right? So, one of them will drop points in that one. So you probably think they've just got enough points that they can kind of, a bit like Yvonne Murray in a middle distance race. She'd go out early, she'd be winning, and by the end, she'd be sort of falling over, but she'd just get over the line as I don't know, Liz McColgan was running through.
Yeah, Barry, by the way, David Moyes has been brilliant this year, especially in Europa League and the like, with the squad that he has. And I think it's kind of a squad that he wants. But I was looking at the table right in front of me, because you know I'm real time. I like to take my stuff seriously. You know what I mean? Top broadcaster. And Wolves are 3 points behind West Ham with a game in hand. And then ahead of West Ham by 2 points of Man United, who are, as an American would say, a dumpster fire. So like, it's interesting because West Ham felt closer to the top four last year than they do this year. But I don't know. And I'm wondering if they're thinking like, when this season's all said and done, that the European side of things is incredible. But would they feel like they let themselves down in the quest for the Champions League? Because at the start of the season, Declan Rice, I remember him saying, "We should have finished fourth last year," is what he said. Like, and with all sort of ambitions, is this like, it's being in seventh, 2 points behind Man United and three ahead of Wolves? Is that where they think that they should be?
Adam says, "I was stood behind Nadim a couple of weeks ago as he bought some focaccia bread. Is focaccia bread his favourite type of bread, or does he prefer others?"
I know exactly where this was, so I'm going to give a shout out to my friend's coffee shop, Pot Kettle Black in Manchester. And it wasn't the focaccia bread solely for me. I was with my wife, my three sisters, and we're about to go on an hour-long journey to go to a wedding. So, yes, I obviously don't eat too many carbs because, you know, I am a former professional. I like to take my life seriously. But, yeah, there was some bread eating in my car on the way over. But that's a good spot by the fella. Next time, just say hi. Just say hi. Easiest thing.
Did any of the did you save any of the focaccia for Dwight Gale? And what's the wedding?
Dwight Gale was not invited to this wedding. He does not come to all of our weddings. And, you know, maybe he's just good at a wedding, which, you know, isn't probably the great sort of measure of how nice somebody is, because everyone tends to be happy there, don't they?
And you'd only eat bread in the car on the way to a wedding.
You need the energy to be able to drive over. Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I'm intrigued by the choice of bread as an in-car snack.
It's quite dry.
No, I don't know which focaccia's your habit, but anyway, with this one,
what was in it?
Had everything on it, so we were at the coffee shop. And we just wanted something that was a bit more than, say, some of the pastries and stuff that were there. Right, okay, so we thought, as a collective, just unite over focaccia. How about that? Yeah.
And it's good, actually. It's good. You have got to eat something before a wedding, because you don't know, between the ceremony and the dinner, you just don't know how long it's going to be. So that is good thinking.
There you go.
Is there any bread in your house, or is it only in the car?
In my house now? No. I think we have lots of bread. Yeah, okay. Not for me though. For like other people, because I don't go too big on carbs.
I have a wedding coming up in a few weeks.
Congratulations, Barry! We thought it would never happen.
It's not mine, and I don't think Dwight Gale is invited either, which is probably for the best. After
you never know
about him, but the reception is at 2 in the afternoon, and then the service is at 2 in the afternoon, and then the reception is until 7. And myself and my friends are all wondering, like, how do you fill that 5-hour window without getting absolutely smashed on booze?
By being responsible, Barry. Yeah, well, by being responsible.
That's a tricky word for Barry. What, Barry? Where is it? Where is it? I mean, could you go to a local attraction?
No, the service is in Stoke Newington, and the reception is in Docklands. Now, the one thing I would say is that there are no pubs in Docklands. So, having previously stepped out with a lady from there, I know the area quite well. But the people who are going to this wedding, trying to keep them out of the pub for 5 hours is going to be a task.
There's a lovely cafe called Jolene on Newington Green where you could get an excellent ham and cheese croissant and just have a cortado or a flat white. I speak as a man of the people. That
I'll tell you
would
what,
fill a,
this
that
podcast
would fill a
has gone downhill, I tell you.
Troy, this
it's
is the Guardian, downhill. Mate. This is Pete Guardian, mate. Anyway, that's enough for today.
If we're scratching for content, just let us know, yeah? We'll fill it in with other stuff. Yeah.
This is the bit that people like. Anyway, that'll do for today's podcast. Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Nedim.
Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Troy.
Thanks, Max. Appreciate it.
We'll be back on Monday. Today's pod was produced by Joel Grove with Silas Gray. Our executive producer is Christian Bennett. See you Monday.
This is The Guardian.